This is the Better Reading Podcast platform with stories behind the story, Jane's Be Better podcast, My Book Chat with Caroline Overington, and more. Looking for a particular podcast? Remember, you can always skip to it.
Welcome to the Better Reading Podcast, Stories Behind the Story, brought to you by Belinda Audio. Listen to Belinda audiobooks anywhere, everywhere.
Hi, this is Cheryl Arkell from the Better Reading Podcast, Stories Behind the Story. We talk to authors about how they came to tell us their story. Geoffrey Robertson, welcome to Better Reading.
Good morning or evening, whichever it is. I'm in London, so it's a different time zone.
Of course, and I'm in Sydney. Geoffrey is a human rights barrister and founder of Doherty Street Chambers. His books include Crimes Against Humanity and the Struggle for Global Justice. Geoffrey Robertson, AO and KC, is a barrister, author, and one-time host of Geoffrey Robertson's Hypotheticals, which I was a big fan of for many years. He is the founder and head of Doherty Street Chambers, now the largest human rights practice in Europe, where he has mentored, among others, Amal Clooney. So this is a very timely book, and it's called, his latest book, The Trial of Vladimir Putin, and it looks at the legal consequences of Putin's illegal invasion of the Ukraine. Now, I guess when you were writing this, Geoffrey, it was a different world, wasn't it? And not so long ago.
Well, no, I started writing it last year after tens of thousands of people had been killed by Putin's invasion of Ukraine. And it struck me that this man was an international criminal, going back to Genghis Khan. Those who start wars are responsible for all the deaths and dismemberment and destruction that they cause, that follows in the wake. And because Putin had no reason other than invented reasons to attack Ukraine, he had no defense to what the Nuremberg court described as the worst crime of all, starting a war without excuse of self-defense. No one could suggest that Ukraine back in 2022 had the intention of invading Russia. So his claim that he'd invaded Ukraine in Russia's self-defense was absurd. And of course, he claimed that Ukraine was full of Nazis, which it wasn't. It was led by a Jewish man. And the far right in Ukraine had been destroyed at a recent election. So there was no substance in his claim that it was led by Nazis or that it was committing genocide against Russians in Ukraine. That was nonsense. So he had no reason to invade, and yet he did. And now, by the time the book is published, it is expected that 500,000 people will be dead or dismembered by the end of this year. They will be over 100,000 Russian soldiers, not to mention a similar number or a part of that number of Ukrainian soldiers, and tens of thousands of Ukrainian citizens, including over 1,000 children. So that is the, if you like, the worst crime against humanity since the Second World War, since Hitler's invasion of those European countries that caused the Nazis to be put on trial at Nuremberg. So working from the precedent of Nuremberg, I've come up with a book that considers his criminality, whether he's guilty or not, whether his defense, self-defense, holds water, and imagined the sort of trial that he could be put on if, for a start, if he was surrendered, rather like Milosevic was surrendered by the Serbian people. And I think that the trial would undoubtedly end with his conviction, although probably not his execution. But it is possible that one day he will stumble into the dock in The Hague like some old Nazi and be tried. Of course, there is another way. In many countries, in Europe, in Ukraine itself, you can have a trial in absentia where the evidence is clear and any conviction, of course, can be vacated if the defendant comes back and faces a retrial. But that's the condition of a trial in absentia. But in this case, we could put Putin on trial and before a court of international judges to decide his guilt.
Right. So that's interesting to me, because when I was referring to the world has changed, I was also talking about Israel and Palestine. And what I'm seeing from my very unlegal perspective, because I'm not a lawyer or a human rights lawyer, but I see that the world legal system has been ineffective. The United Nations has been ineffective. I mean, it just gets a veto from the US and nobody else is listened to. And then you get South Africa taking Israel to the ICJ?
Yes.
And again, nothing.
The International Court of Justice.
And then nothing happens there either. And what I'm seeing is a world order at the moment, and you'll have a better perspective on it than me, that is allowing these monsters to keep going, because there seems to be no checking mechanism. And if it's going to happen, it's going to happen in the future after they've both Netanyahu and Putin have killed millions of people.
Well, that's right, up to a point. There is a bright, shining light at the end of what will be a long tunnel. But I deal in my book with Gaza and with the some of the 15 or so wars that are going on at the moment. Right. Ukraine and Gaza get all the publicity, but in Sudan,
yes.
There is a dreadful war. 15,000 people have been killed already between two greedy and barbaric generals who are fighting for no reason other than their own power and profit. In Myanmar, you have the government, democratic government of Aung San Suu Kyi has been thrown out by the colonels, by the army, which is fighting a bitter war against her supporters. In Taiwan, you have a threat credible enough from China. Mm. And this is a turbulent time in the world. And of course, we set down an international rules-based order back in 1945. Thanks to, in part, the Australian, Dr. Evatt, who devised this system. But it had a fatal flaw. The General Assembly of the UN is just a talking shop. Mm. The Security Council has all the power. And yet, it gave five vetoes to the five then important states. And consequences that Russia always vetoes any attempt to make peace in Ukraine. America, on behalf of Israel, always vetoes, and didn't the last time, but that was a very limited attempt to stop fighting during Ramadan. But it's cast three vetoes over the last month or so to stop a ceasefire resolution. So the United Nations is hopeless and helpless when it comes to ending a war in which one of its major superpowers has an interest, is involved, or has an ally. So there we are. But it's not as gloomy as you make out, because let's take Gaza, for example. When that hideous and obscene attack on October the 7th came, everyone in the West rallied behind Israel. Israel could do no wrong, but it did do wrong because it overreacted, and it has killed, by now, 34,000 people in Gaza. But
it not only overreacted, it has been practicing apartheid practices for many years. Look at the settlers in the West Bank. Look at what's happening in Gaza. But it's not present. Now, you know, October the 7th was terrible. No civilians should be murdered. No civilians. No Israeli civilians, no Palestinian civilians. But I feel that this, and you can't call it a war because it's not like Russia and the Ukraine. Palestinians
Israel
aren't armed.
Israel is the occupying power.
Yeah.
And so it has duties to look after the population. But in view of Israel's reaction, which was one of not punishment, not seeking to prosecute the Hamas leadership, which was guilty of this unforgivable crime, but it was revenge on the whole population. And this is the basis of the allegation of genocide. Now, genocide is not usually charged in this situation because Israel was really attempting to destroy Hamas, a political organization. And that's what lawyers call politicide rather than genocide, which has to be destroying a race or religion in whole or part. So it may well be that Israel will be acquitted at the end of the day of genocide, but it is nonetheless prima facie guilty of a number of war crimes, of starvation, of bombing indiscriminately in a way that kills innocent civilians. And so it was interesting to me that the tide against Israel after 6 months was started really by the South African case in the International Court of Justice, which Israel, for its credit, intervened and argued it should be thrown out, but it wasn't. The 16 of the 17 judges, including the Australian judge, very good judge, Hilary Charlesworth, decided that it should go ahead because of the pre-genocidal aspects of the attack on Gaza, including the danger of starving the population, of denying medical assistance, and so on. So by making that ruling, I think the attitude of the West has rather changed. Even America is now highly critical of Israeli tactics. And
not enough.
People trying to, well, it remains to be seen, but there are strong efforts from the West, from America, from Britain, even I suspect from Australia, that are trying to stop Israel making a further attack on Rafah, which would endanger tens of thousands of lives. There are 1.5 million people huddled in Rafah, and it is a great worry that Israel might extend its attack. So it's not as gloomy, I think, as you portray, because the International Court of Justice and the rule, it's not enforceable, But the verdict of international law is being taken into account. That's why across campuses in America, you're getting, after 6 months, this surge of student hostility to Israel. And, of course, it has caused, sadly, a lot of anti-Semitism, irrational, I think, because anti-Semitism is the worst of all hate, race hatreds. But that has, as I say, rationally, been caused by the overreaction, disproportionate behavior of the Israeli Defense Force. But as I say, there are now a number of states that, buoyed up by the decision of the International Court of Justice, are trying to restrain Israel in relation to Rafah.
Like Putin, will Netanyahu ever face The Hague?
Well, the prosecutor at The Hague, Kerim Khan, has went standing on the Gaza border because he wasn't allowed in, has promised investigation, and investigations go on. It is interesting, I think, when the South African government brought Israel to account in The Hague. Several members of my chambers were involved. But Israel went into the case thinking that it would be thrown out on the basis that this was politicide, not genocide. And they started with quotations from the president of Israel, Herzog, and the very right-wing Minister of Defense, which were seemingly genocidal in intent, because they said that all Palestinians were animals who should be treated as such. So, and I think that was effective in making the ICJ judges thinking that there was an arguable, or at least a plausible, case. I think at the end of the day, they may say that it doesn't meet the technical qualifications for genocide, but that's yet to be seen. The fact is that they gave an order that Israel should allow food and so forth in. So that was novel, because countries don't usually take other countries to court. And there's been another case recently where the Gambia took to court the other questions of, against states, international law questions against Myanmar. So it's, I think that international law, the rules of international law, of international so-called humanitarian law, which are really the laws of war. Wars are not, by any stretch of the imagination, humanitarian, but it is nonetheless a standard, and people and governments are becoming more aware of the standards that it sets.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Do you think, I have this theory that Alexei Navalny,
yes.
You can correct me, Jeffrey, but I feel that his death was a consequence of what's happening in the world at the moment, giving permission for Putin to commit more atrocities. Because I feel that the cycle in the world at the moment is really giving permission to despots, dictators. They call Israel a democracy, but I think that that's, you know, borderline. But I think the behavior of one and the other creates worse behavior.
Well, Israel is a democracy, and the problem is with democracy that you have people who want revenge. But you've got to remember that just before the October the 7th attack, Israel was up in arms for a very democratic reason, namely that the right-wing Netanyahu government was trying to curb the judiciary.
Yes. So yes. Yeah.
And one of the great ironies is that that ultra-democratic movement to rein in the right-wing government was really thrown into abeyance by the pressing question of Gaza. But Navalny's death, I attribute to the Russian state, and I attribute it to the judge, the dreadful woman judge, actually, who denied him bail. You remember he had been poisoned by the state. He was managed to get to Berlin and to recover from the poisoning, and then he flew back, unwisely perhaps, but
very unwise, very unwise,
to Russia.
Yeah.
And he asked for bail, and he was charged with missing an appointment with his probation officer. That was the charge. And everyone in the world knew why he had missed that appointment, because he was fighting for life in a German hospital. And yet this hideous judge remanded him in custody, and he was never seen again. He stayed in custody as they brought various absurd treason charges against him. And so there it was, whether they actually killed him or he died simply from cold and isolation and with a heart problem. And no one knows at this stage. We'll find out. If the Russians, it's up to them, decide that Putin could go on no longer, because he's destroyed their society. There are up to a million refugees. Australia should actually take some of them, because they're young and they're bright and they've left. They're in the, you find them in the internet cafes in Armenia and Georgia, because they are the future of Russia, those who fled, because they do not want to kill innocent Ukrainians and be conscripted. So I think they are the hope, their existence, the hope for a future of Russia without Putin, because the man is a criminal.
There is
no question that, and I explain in my book exactly why, under international law and the law that was passed at Nuremberg, he is guilty of the worst international crime, and he is responsible for all those deaths that have occurred in the war, even though he may not have been a commander on the ground. If you commit a war crime, you get a medal from Putin rather than get investigated and thrown in jail. And he has kidnapped thousands of children, and he's been charged at the ICC with the International Criminal Court with kidnapping children, and that's what he's done to...
Jeffrey, are you worried? I'm worried about world order at the moment. And you've got what's happening in Russia. you've got what's happening in Israel. You know, I mean, you know, Netanyahu hopefully will be charged with some kind of crime and his right-wing government. And then you've got the possibility of Donald Trump being the US president, and he is also criminal. Where are we going? Well,
on a lesser stage.
Sure.
Trump is not an aggressor, but he is, unless you're a porn star or something.
But there was the attack on the Capitol. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel as though we've got people in power at the moment, and they're there mainly for their own reasons. Putin, Netanyahu's trying to stay out of jail. Trump's trying to stay out of jail. And I think that that's a threat to world order.
Well, if the world order is at least respected, these people can be localized and isolated. But where is the world order stopping the barbarism in the Sudan? I mean, once upon a time, the United Nations Security Council would have sent in blue berets, as they were called, to keep the peace. And they did it in Cyprus. I think they're still there, but they've kept the peace in Cyprus for 50 years. But, of course, no one is suggesting that now. The Organization of African Unity and so on is a joke. There is no will to solve what is plainly a barbaric and unreasonable war. The colonels in Myanmar, ASEAN, which we're supposed
to. So what's going to happen?
So, well, I think that there must be some sort of reckoning. And with the threat of China invading Taiwan, with the reality of Russia committing the crime of aggression against Ukraine, we might have to look at a different sort of United Nations. And if you go back, as I have and explain in my book, to 1938-39, when the League of Nations collapsed because it couldn't stop war, there was an active discussion of how to set up a new body. And the idea, it was promoted particularly by H.G. Wells, the great British writer and philosopher, was that it should be an organization, he said, of parliamentary peoples, in other words, of democracies. And that was widely accepted at a time when Stalin was in bed with Hitler, working out how to carve up Poland. But of course, as time went by, Stalin became our great ally. And so in 1945, he couldn't be kept out of the United Nations, fundamental partner in the UN.
I just want to know, Jeffrey, are you feeling optimistic about the future?
Not very, but there is, as I say, an optimism that derives from the greater recognition of international law. We may possibly have to change the structure of the United Nations. I've got several ideas for that. And in my book, I look at the future rather more hopefully, and indeed the ways in which the standards that were set in 1945 can be revived and followed, even though the structure of 1945 needs to be rethought. But they are crucial questions for the world as we go on, as we wish to protect Taiwan and other democracies that, you know, eight democracies have been suborned by army coups in Africa alone. And this is And it is tragic that at a time where optimism derives from the enormous advances made in medicine and science and all the other things that have happened since COVID, where we are, in fact, a happier and longer living species, should be torn apart by our inability to stop governments going to war.
We are out of time. I really, really enjoyed our conversation, Jeffrey. The book is called The Trial of Vladimir Putin. Jeffrey's also coming to Australia, so maybe you can go hear him speak. Thank you again. I've got to say, I'm such a privilege.
Thanks a lot, and I hope to be conversing a little more optimistically in the future.
If you'd like more information about Better Eating, follow us on Facebook or visit betterreading.com.au.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by Belinda Audio. Belinda audiobooks are available on CD and MP3 from online booksellers and bookshops everywhere, or you can download from Audible, Google Play, or the iBook Store. We've also created our own app called BorrowBox that's available from both the App Store and Google Play. All you need to do to get it working is to download the app, join your local public library, and you'll gain access to the world's best collection of ebooks and e-audiobooks available for you to loan on your phone or your personal device. Belinda, we're here to enable you to escape, imagine, grow, and be inspired through the power of storytelling. Belinda Audiobooks. Anywhere, everywhere.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
If you enjoyed this podcast, leave us a review and check out the other podcasts on the Better Reading Network.